Historian Doris Kearns Goodwin has written best-selling books about Lincoln, JFK, LBJ. She now adds another bestseller and another great American, her late husband, presidential speechwriter Richard Goodwin. A self-described Jewish kid from Brookline, Massachusetts, whose family struggled financially, Dick sold Fuller brushes door-to-door and was a fry cook on Revere Beach to get to Tufts and Harvard Law. He went on to write for men whose vision, ending racism and poverty, matched his. His words gave their goals majesty. Over time, he filled 300 boxes with letters, tapes, photos. He was going to write a book. After he died in 2018, Doris, frozen in grief, turned those boxes into the biography, An Unfinished Love Story. We sat down at a sold-out event at WBUR's City Space, and I described Dick. Okay, Dick Goodwin. He had untamable eyebrows, a piercing intellect. As he aged, a chiseled face that looked like it got up and walked off Mount Rushmore. And had there been a Mount Rushmore for speechwriters, he would have been up there.
Oh, wow.
And did you know that Dick swam naked in the pool with LBJ? And out of that encounter came his phrase for LBJ's vision, the Great Society.
Well, what really amazed me when we went through these 300 boxes, he was afraid of opening them because the decade had ended so badly. It was really a time capsule of the 60s. So finally, when he turned 80, he came down the stairs one day. He's singing from Oklahoma, "Oh, what a beautiful morning," still having shaving cream on his ear, typically. And he said, "Okay, I'm going to open the boxes. It's now or never." So we spent the last years of his life reliving the 1960s through the boxes from beginning to end. So we suspended our knowledge of what would happen later. That's how you have to do it as an historian, right? Not know that Barbara Tuchman said, even if you're writing about a war, don't know how that war ended. And I found out even more than I knew that he was like Zelig in the 60s. He just seems to be everywhere where you'd want somebody to be. You'd sort of say, there's Dick Goodwin. How did he end up there in every place along the way?
Dick served in the military before graduating number one at Harvard Law, not at all excited about working in a stultifying firm. Doris found a picture of his class. Who's in that picture?
Yeah, look at that picture.
Well, he's in the middle.
He's in the middle holding the baton. 60 guys on the Law Review and two women. If you look on one side, it is Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And on the other side is a woman named Nancy Boxley. I found this picture right after I had read a letter that he had written to his friend George saying that the law firms all over the country are competing for him. It's a real burden of choice. And I went running into him when I found this. I said, "What? This is maddening. Ruth Bader Ginsburg couldn't even get an interview for a law job. And you are having a burden of choice." He says, "Not my fault. It's not my fault."
Dick would clerk for Supreme Court Justice Frankfurter and, still in his 20s, land a job at a House committee where he'd uncover the 1950s quiz show scandal, contestants like Charles Van Doren given the questions and the answers. Later, Dick would write about it. Robert Redford made a movie. Rob Morrow played Dick.
And I remember when the movie was finally made, Redford said to Dick, "What did you think of the movie?" He said, "How could I not love it? I'm the moral center of the movie. I'm played by a handsome young guy. It's the best."
In the late 1950s, Ted Sorensen asked Dick to write a speech for then-Senator John F. Kennedy's presidential campaign. Dick would go on with JFK's team to the White House. So Dick Goodwin, right after the inauguration, 29, he's going to check out his office in the White House, and there is JFK checking out his, the Oval Office. It's just the two of them. JFK turns to his new young speechwriter and says what?
He says, "Did you see the Coast Guard contingent in the inaugural parade? There wasn't a black face among them. We must do something about that." So that was Dick's first assignment. And then he thought, where is the Coast Guard? What does it do? It's in the Treasury Department. The first black was allowed into the academy. He became an honor student, and his name was Merle Smith. It was not easy.
Dick would then be put in charge of a Latin America initiative. He'd take a private meeting with Che Guevara, a diplomatic misstep. He became a confidant to Jackie Kennedy, suggesting she have a party for all the living Nobel Prize and many Pulitzer Prize winners, Frost to Oppenheimer. In another picture, Dick escorts the First Lady in formal wear into the ball.
This is one of his favorite pictures. You can well imagine it hung on the wall and for a long, long time.
It was Camelot. Then, horribly, it ended. After Kennedy was assassinated, Dick, now 33, scrambled to help prepare the funeral.
And because of his friendship with Jackie, he followed some of her desires to have the body, when it came back in the East Room, look like it did when Abraham Lincoln was there. So they had to go to the Library of Congress in the middle of the night. They had to have flashlights to find a magazine which described exactly how it was when Lincoln was there. And then he was in charge of getting the eternal flame.
It was crushing. And then there was the tension between the JFK and LBJ camps.
So one of the conversations was recorded with Bill Moyers, LBJ's aide. Johnson says, I need a new speechwriter here, somebody who can put sex into my speeches, somebody who can use great Churchillian phrases. And Moyers says, well, the only one I know is Goodwin, but he's not one of us because he was a Kennedy, but LBJ brings him over. Moyers says to him one day, the president wants us to talk to him about his vision for the Johnson program because he had already begun to get the Kennedy programs through this tax cut and the civil rights bill. So Dick said, so we going to the Oval? He said, no, we're going to the White House pool. And there is Lyndon Johnson swimming up and down naked in the pool. And he says, come on in, boys. So they strip on the spot. And now three guys are nakedly swimming in the pool. Finally, they stop. And Johnson then gives his vision of America. Medicare, Medicaid, aid to education, civil rights, voting rights, NPR, PBS. It's amazing. And then they have to decide what to call it. So somebody in the White House wanted to call it a better deal instead of a new deal. Someone else wanted the Glorious Society. But Dick tried out the Great Society in a number of small speeches, and it caught on. And the Great Society lives everywhere around us still today.
He also was the right man for the racial disruptions that we were seeing that were a long time in coming. This has come to be known as the We Shall Overcome speech. It's after these events of the marchers at Selma being beaten and everyone watching it on television. Let's listen.
What happened in Selma is part of a far larger movement which reaches into every section and state of America. It is the effort of American Negroes to secure for themselves the full blessings of American life. Their cause must be our cause too, because it's not just Negroes, but really it's all of us who must overcome the crippling legacy of bigotry and injustice. And we shall overcome.
That's in Congress. Dick decided to use Martin Luther King's words there. What did that mean?
Yeah, what it meant really is you're taking the anthem of the civil rights movement, an outside movement pressuring the government inside, and bringing it to the highest channels of power. So he sat in his office that day. He told everybody, you've just got to leave me alone. Nobody can bother me. And at one point, he just took a break, and he went to take a walk, and he heard in the distance some people singing, We Shall Overcome. And that's how he thought about using the anthem at that moment.
Dick Goodwin and LBJ grew apart over the expanding Vietnam War. Dick went to work for Eugene McCarthy, the quixotic anti-war candidate. Then Johnson shocked the country, announcing he wouldn't run again. Robert Kennedy jumped into the race. Dick joined his best friend and was with him when he also was assassinated.
I think really in a certain sense, when Bobby died, Dick's dream of what was possible in public life died for a period of time as well.
Well, there would be columns, editorials. When the Supreme Court decided George Bush won the 2000 election, Dick wrote Al Gore's healing concession speech, reaching back to what Stephen Douglas said to Lincoln in his.
I'm with you, Mr. President, and God bless you. Well, in that same spirit, I say to President-elect Bush that what remains of partisan rancor must now be put aside, and may God bless his stewardship of this country.
As Doris said to us, can you imagine that now? Dick Goodwin was a Kennedy guy. Doris, 12 years younger, would become LBJ's close confidant and biographer. When they started the box's journey, they shook hands on a deal that they'd wait to the end to see how they felt. So I asked her, start with Dick. What happened?
The resentments that he held because of the war really were poisoning him in a certain sense. And then one day when we went through those boxes, especially the ones that had to do with the Voting Rights Act and all the Great Society legislation of 1965, I could feel that something had broken within him of that anger. And then he finally said, oh my God, I'm beginning to feel affection for the old guy again. I think it allowed him then to remember what he did too. And then meanwhile, I had begun to feel the inspiration that JFK, when he was young, provided. So I was feeling better about him. And I think for both of us, it meant a lot. So after a period of time when I just was paralyzed and couldn't figure out if I could do this, I started up again from the beginning and was able to finish the book. And I'd like to think he'd be proud that I had done so.
Oh, I... I'm just going to leave us with the last words you heard from Dick. You are a wonder. Doris Kearns Goodwin.
Thank you so much.
Doris Kearns Goodwin, her book on her husband, presidential speechwriter Dick Goodwin, is called An Unfinished Love Story, A Personal History of the 1960s.